morning we are going to have a speaker that we know, one from here at the seminary, Dr. Joseph Barber. He earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1975 from the University of Louisville and a Master of Arts degree in 1977 from Spalding College in Louisville. He then attended Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and earned his Master of Divinity degree in 1983. Also, while in Fort Wayne, he served as a psychological consultant to Lutheran Homes in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He then received his first assignment to Zion Lutheran Church, Bolivar, Missouri, and served as an assistant pastor there from 1983 to 1987. He's been here at Concordia Seminary since 1987, and last spring, he completed his PhD degree in Marriage and Family Therapy and Development at St. Louis University. He speaks from experience. He's married to Pamela and has two children of his own, Greg and Amanda. We welcome Dr. Joseph Barber.
This is very exciting to be here. I'm rarely asked to speak in public here on campus. No, I'm honored to be here. I could not find my tape, Stand By Your Man. I think that my wife has hidden it or destroyed it somewhere. I read to you from Ephesians, the 5th chapter. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, nowhere in there, and I have checked the languages and several English versions, does it say that this is true unless or until you become a seminary student or a pastor. This is true for all relationships at all times, having to do with husbands and wives. I heartily recommend these passages to you for your study. But we're going to discover, God willing, that the seminary is a stressful event. Maybe news. I spent all last year researching clergy families and sources of marital stress within those families. And one phenomenon that kept reoccurring was the seminary experience. Now, the literature, if I can sum up what there is in the literature of the last 25 years, it goes something like this, that if you can survive the seminary experience, that if your marriage can stay whole emotionally, this is not talking about divorce, I'm talking about staying connected emotionally, that if your marriage can sustain and make it through the seminary experience, you will have a stronger marriage, having had that experience. Well, good news or bad news? Who knows? I guess it depends. When you decided to come to the seminary, your life and the life cycle in which you were involved basically came to a halt. And yet, and still, it marches on. But the family being the focus of your life is no longer the case. The seminary somehow became the focus of your life. Now, you people tend to be, and Lutherans in general, tend to be middle class, upper middle class, lower middle class, somewhere in that middle class kind of range of people. And when you decided to come to the seminary, many of you who are second career, you gave up that career to come here. Those of you who were two career couples, you had to give up two careers. 80% of my sample of pastors indicated that wives had a career. The makeup of clergy families is no longer the wife who stays at home and the husband who goes and works and comes in and the wife sort of fixes him dinner whenever he pops in the door. What we see now is a two-career couple experience. Whether this is good or bad, that's up for you as individuals, I guess, to decide. But as you have come into the seminary, a married individual, or if you get married while at the seminary, you will notice that your relationship will begin to shift. Perhaps the most stressful situation on any marriage would be a person who comes to the seminary, is here for several weeks, gets married, and immediately has a child. There probably is no greater stressful event, other than your own impending death, that you will have to deal with. When you entered the seminary, there were two basic life-changing factors that surrounded you and which keep you in tune with, that are constantly you're being reminded of. The first were your losses. If you got married, we really have two different genre of married types here. We have those who were students, and then they came here and they got married and they've always been a student, and that's well and good. And those who were second career types, those who had a job for at least 2 years, or, you know, tried to keep a job for 2 years, and then you came here. That's a joke. Lighten up now. But when you decided to come into the seminary, you may remember mentioning this to your spouse. I remember very vividly. I remember the day that Kennedy was shot. I remember the day that his brother was shot. And I remember the day I mentioned to my wife that I was thinking of considering the seminary. There is a stress that is true for second career couples that is not true for students who have always been on this seminary path. And that is that your wife married someone else. They married a department store clerk, or they married an engineer, my wife married a counselor. And when I said, oh dear, I've always had in the back of my mind that I want to be a pastor, that was well and good. She said, fine, go enjoy. So, after some discussion, it sounds much worse than it was, after some discussion, it came about that she was willing to follow me and to support me as I have tried to support her in her own career. I come from a two-career family. My wife is, she runs 13 nursing homes. She's gone a lot. And one interesting phenomenon that you won't hear anywhere else regarding my own research is that meals are a primary source of stress in a relationship that is already stressed out. And you guys, the way it tends to work is that women still are responsible for doing all the house cleaning and the meals and all of that child care, even if they're working 10 hours a day. That suits me just fine. But for some people, especially my wife, this presents a great strain, and she expects certain adjustments in the task and the roles at home. But when we came here and when you came here, you experienced some losses. One loss, as a student, has to do with living arrangements. Now, if you are a middle-class type person, you probably had a fine apartment. At the very least, your trailer had a nice skirt around it. Well, mine did. Now, but maybe you had homes, you had jobs and careers, you had a bank account. Remember that? And when you come here, you basically give all of that up. All of the resources that you have are drained into the seminary. And the seminary becomes not only a source of your new career, it also becomes a source of frustration. And one human factor that we have to be aware of is that we tend to want to destroy our sources of frustration. But you lost at least one job, you gave up at least one job, perhaps you gave up two careers. The income dropped, and you will move at least 4 times before you get out of here. If you follow the normal path, you come in here, you go leave on vicarage, you come back from vicarage, and then you leave here, and typically you'll stay about 2 years in your parish when we're working very hard to fix that. If you have children, that means that they have been disrupted many, many times. you have done the very things that a child specialist will tell you never to do. And it is not anyone's like fault. It is just a change in the student body that these institutions have represented. Concordia Seminary has been here 151 years, is that correct? And in that time, it is only in the last two or three decades that it has been possible that a person could even come here with a spouse. Before that, it wasn't even permissible to have a girlfriend. We have a long history of tradition here that goes back much further than you and whose roots are much deeper than anyone who is sitting here. And while some of that may have to change, it will take a long time, and it will probably not be before you leave here. The seminary is very concerned and aware of these issues, in spite of the way you may feel sometimes. And it takes a long time to change an institution. Just as when you get in your church, you'll find it takes a long time to make those changes. But other losses that you had were your dreams, the things that you wanted to do, your own career. My wife and I just purchased a home. We just put up a fence. Just had a child. Oh, it was great. And I said, "Dear, it's time to go." We live in the same community. I live 2 miles from my mother, and she lived 3 miles from hers. What finer position could anyone be in? I even had a job. And my family's always amazed when I tell them I'm really working. Now that's a joke. One other loss that you have had, there are many, many losses, these are the major ones, is the proximity of your family. Many of you lived within a certain distance from your family, and studies show that within 10 years you will probably live within a day's driving distance of your mother-in-law. Now that's kind of scary, but that's the way it is. You also experienced a lot of stress as a factor. Now, these are true stats, by the way. You experience a lot of stress because you're changing careers. And if you look at stress data, stress information, stress scales, if you will, right at the top of the list are changing careers, losing a job, getting another job, moving, death, going to jail are up there, but you probably didn't have to experience that. Getting married, having a child, all of those things, leaving family, all of those are factors that you have had to contend and deal with. And then you walk in the door and you meet a whole different set of expectations. I don't want to paint a bleak picture, because at the end it gets better here, but we're looking at the facts here. You've moved to a new town. You have come to an unknown factor known as the seminary. You have been given a set of expectations that is to supplant your own. You are given a dream, which is to take the place of your own, and you are told basically to adjust. You have placed your lives in the hands of another, many of you, much more so than the seminary has any desire to handle. You have had to experience financial changes, these exorbitant expectations, and as stress enters your relationship, you will have noticed that the communication patterns between you and your spouse have changed. Many families, and I work a lot with families, and I work a lot with clergy families for the district. And one common factor in my own research and in empirical data is that when you, many of you, had a very warm, loving relationship before you came to the seminary, and after about a year here, you're starting not to like each other so much, and you can't quite figure it out. Part of that, most of that, is the stress. And what we're going to look at today is how to readjust that so that it doesn't feel so badly. Anger becomes a very prevalent part of your relationship when there's a lot of stress. Now, one thing that these families have found and those who have preceded you have discovered that if your marriage was pretty solid when you came in, you survived this experience, when you go into the parish, it becomes like solid again. The parish experience is not like a seminary experience. You buy your own calendar. You have all these expectations that are placed upon you, but you can say no if you want to. Someday, come up to a professor, try with me if you want to, and I'll say, "You need to write a paper." And come up and say, "Well, no." You know, you can't survive here that way. In the parish, you can say no. Perhaps you shouldn't, and you have to evaluate those kinds of things. But you can say no. Your life becomes your own once again. And the parish, while it is a stressful venture, it is a different type of stress and a much more warm and welcoming kind of stress. No professor here brings food to you, and people don't come up and tell you how much they appreciated your sermon, even though it may have been just kind of so-so. And the elderly ladies who want to adopt you, you don't have that here, at least not on an ongoing daily basis. And those things mean a lot in the parish, getting strokes and being received and loved. Hopefully you are receiving positive kinds of feedback from the professors and from each other, and you have developed that kind of relationship with others. But with your spouse, under a great deal of stress, it is very hard to be as supportive as Christ asks us to be. It becomes work. It's not a natural process anymore when stress enters into that relationship. Now, I like to experiment here. And those of you who have had me in class go, oh no, I need some volunteers. By the way, this stands for job, not Job. I need five volunteers. Thank you. Let's see, I gotta divvy these out just right here. Can I let you be a... I need a see, my wife, we're kind of short on the there's the no not me. Okay, well, any volunteer. Oh, there we go. Should we give her a round of applause? Now, some interesting phenomena occur when you come into the seminary. First of all, you receive a set of expectations. Now, the seminary, their role, their goal, their responsibility that has been given to us, because I'm a part of this, that's been given to us by the role, by the church at large, is that we take men and we train them and we place them into the church so that they can both defend the church and the confessions and the scripture and its truth and its purity, and they can share that truth and purity with others. The only way that that can be done is through academic excellence and by nurturing the gifts that God has given you and by helping you find gifts you may not have even known you had. But at no time can the seminary, because of its responsibility, say, well, you know, we have a different population, so we need to kind of ease off or slack up or something like that. Because basically the church is here, and we are responsible for maintaining the church in the world. So we have our set of expectations, and those have come from above through Scripture and through the church at large. We can't abdicate those. Now, at the same time, as a father, as a husband, you have certain responsibilities, which Scripture is very clear, says that you cannot abdicate those. You are to make sacrifices for your wife. I love that Ephesians 5 passage, because the word boss isn't in there. Did you notice that? It talks about sacrificing one for the other 100%, that the husband and the wife are to sacrifice for each other. It's like both the husband and wife just sit around thinking another sacrifice they can make for their spouse in order to support and to help them. Now, I read that to my wife occasionally, and she... Now, but that should have no effect on what we're doing here. No, I'm just kidding. My poor wife is a very loving, lovely person. But the seminary, if you can be the seminary here a little longer, turn around. The seminary is a very rock-solid... Can you stand up here? A rock-solid institution that is not going to change, and I pray God that it doesn't. I mean, we have to make some adjustments here and there and make things easier, but in terms of Scripture and its truth and purity, it has to be. It has to be, and it cannot change. The expectations that we place on students cannot change, I believe. But what has to happen is that the student, the father, the husband, along with the wife and the children, they have to be responsible for how much of that they can endure and survive as a family. The seminary cannot be responsible for your family. We don't want to be responsible for your family. It's tough enough for us to figure out what truth and purity of Scripture is, and to make documents and to write things and all of that. We do not and cannot be responsible for the responsibility that has been given to you by God. Now, a SEM student. A SEM student comes into the life of the seminary. Can you touch this one? And they embrace. They embrace. This is far more than I could ever have hoped for. Now, the problem with being a seminary student is that he's also a... Can you flip your card around? A husband! He has two roles. He has at least two roles. A seminary student, oh, well, just think of the roles that you have in your own lives. You're a husband, you're a son, you are a father, perhaps. You're a seminary student, you're a friend, you're an employee. There are any number of roles that you play. And you have to decide which ones you're going to utilize the most, because probably when you become a seminary student, you are basically on overload. One thing that we discover about families who come into the seminary is that they no longer are thriving and growing and completing dreams and building their bank accounts. They are learning how to survive. That is a very sad phenomenon that is not necessary. It becomes necessary when the seminary's expectations are adopted fully and wholly for our own families. If I'm a professor, I have expectations of my students. And I'm not going to change that because I feel like a certain amount of information has to be given out. What is the student's responsibility is if they're going to take me or when they take me. And if it takes longer or a shorter period of time, the primary relationship here always has to be the husband and wife. Now, can I make you a wife here? Okay. You all have to embrace them. Okay. Actually, there's more to that little scene than meets the eye. When you come into the seminary, you embrace the seminary. What you are doing as a student is all important. It's all important to us, and it's all important to the church. But it is not more all important than your role that has been given to you by God as a husband and as a father. Now, God presents and gives people to each other, and they are as one. It is not a question of, do I choose the seminary over my children? Do I choose the seminary over my spouse? When that happens, a part of you is cut off, and that part of you that is cut off begins to die. And because you are connected and seen as one, all of the things that you touch then begin to die. Now, my research was very clear that pastors in the field received much more energy and were energized by being in contact with their families than they were with being in contact with their parishioners. Well, a lot of money was spent figuring that out. But for some reason, it still surprises people. Now, we have here the son. Well, let me go over here just a minute. Well, we have here the child. Would you stand between the husband and wife? Yes. Now, where do children come from? Trick question. They come from God, do they not? Sure they do. And why do you think your child was given to you?
To know the children they come.
But who said it was a mistake? No, it was not a mistake. God has given you this child as a gift that you are to nurture and to raise and to make competent. And the first 4 years of this child's life will be the most important in terms of establishing these relationships, in terms of emotional connectedness with the parents, in terms of discipline, in terms of value that this child has, in terms of his own relationship with God. Because we tend to view God the same way we view our parents. And whether that's good or bad is beside the point. That's the way we tend to see God. If we have a father who is very distant, cold, and harsh, we tend to see a God or have a God who is very cold and distant and harsh and waiting to pounce on us in a very judgmental way. If we have a God, a Father, who is very loving and caring and nurturing, and parents who are very caring, loving, and nurturing, we tend to see God that same way. And when you come to the seminary, you get a new view about all of this, and that's all well and good, but that part is still there, connected with you. If this son comes in, and doesn't he look good? If this son comes in when he is an infant, he will spend the first 4 years of his life at the seminary. Now the question then becomes, because these are the most important years of his life, what role does the father play? How is the father to be connected to this child? If he is to maintain a lot of distance because he's so wrapped up in his studies, if the father has made that commitment that the seminary will be the primary focus in his life, he is in essence abdicating his position as father of this child. And the repercussions are long-lasting. It's really scary. If, on the other hand, the father sees this child as someone who has been given to him as a gift from God, for whom he is responsible, a person may have to reprioritize what they're going to do. I don't think there's a professor here that would ask a father to give up his son. Not for an A, as opposed to a B. Academic excellence is important, and I don't wish to indicate anything else. But you, in terms of sacrifices, one has to decide what is going to be sacrificed if you have an infant and a wife and you're at the seminary. Now, if this, well, for instance, if this child comes in when he's 8, well, heck, that's good, right? Because he already got past that age 4 and he's already all. But it's something about going from 8 to 12, that pre-pubescent period. I don't know if any of you ever did that, but it's kind of a tough time.
Tell me about it.
Especially if you're in the process of moving 4 times in those 4 years. Moving is a very disruptive process. Changing schools, even if you don't move households, is a disruptive process. But to actually move your household, change jobs, which, you know, in the eyes of a child, you know, you're from being a student to being a vicar, and then moving back to being a student again, and then moving out. You've done all the most stressful events, and you've done them 4 times. And you've done it with the blessing of your family. Now, there's no reason why the family cannot survive this. Lots of families survive this, and many are strengthened by it. But it is only when the family receives its appropriate focus that this can occur. Now, as long as this child... I'm going to rearrange them. Well, I need your all's help. How far away, in your own experience, should the wife be pushed back to give this person more room to do his studies? No, that's fine. Now, does that look about right? I'm not talking about the way it should be. I'm talking about the way it is. Okay, this looks about right? Okay, now where's the son in this picture?
It depends if it's finals week, too.
Well, we're going to eliminate finals week. That's an exception exception to the rule. That's like when somebody dies on your day off. You know, you tell them to wait till tomorrow, but it doesn't, I don't know, just something about that doesn't work. The son, where should the son be?
By the wife.
By mom. Yeah, and they were probably, no? The other way around? You think this is right?
And the son takes him to the wife, too.
Son closer. Ooh. Okay, which side of mom is the son on? We have some disagreement here. The other side? Okay, how many say the other side, away from dad? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And... Because, ooh. Well, they might.
Okay.
We're going to get into that. Okay, how many people believe it should be the son should be on this side between mom and dad? Oh, well, we're about evenly distributed here, so now I don't know what to do. Okay, would you spend part of your time there and then occasionally change? Now, how far away is the student to the seminary? Pretty close?
Yeah.
Whose hand is in whose pocket now? Okay, well let's touch here somehow. Okay. Is this the way it looks emotionally? Is there something wrong with this picture? Okay, now. Oh, Dad and Mom and John. Okay, can I move you over here? Would you go stand by Mom?
You bet. My mom?
Yes. Oh, the wife. I'm sorry. Okay. Now, in the clergy, are y'all
who's
related?
Her wife? Her job or my job?
Oh, they're talking about her job.
Oh, her job.
Yeah, because your job is simply to support your efforts here. Her job is to support the whole family. Now, we have here a father.
Dad and Mom.
Dad and Mom. I don't know how we're going to...
It's got to be kind of like this.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, when Mom's working and Dad takes care of the kids? Does that ever happen to you? When your wife comes in and says, you know, husband, I want to, this is my bridge day, and this is my bonbon eating day, and I want to go and have some fun for myself, and I want Sunday afternoon off, I want you to watch the kids. What is our typical response? I got a test tomorrow? Is that the standard? How many of you have said that even when you didn't have a test? Yes, yes, I went to the seminary, I know. Okay, can I bring you over here?
Alright.
You see, we kind of get split at times. And this dad, Mom, Dad, if you'll flip that back and forth, if you'll stand over there by your... Well, stand right there.
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's still something wrong with this picture. We got too many dads to begin with, but what needs to happen here? What keeps the student so tied to the seminary that he is willing to sacrifice his wife and his children?
Grades.
Grades. There is a phenomenon at this institution, as there are at all institutions. I've been in a number of very good institutions, by the way. That's a joke. Where a B, if you get a B in this institution, have you had a phenomenon yet where you get an A minus and you think, oh man, what did I do wrong? Does that happen to you yet? Or you get a B and you think, oh gee, how's this going to look? How does a B look? Yeah, it depends on where you are, yeah, but it can't look real good. For most people, though, it looks like a big F. What makes a B so close to an F?
It's not an A.
It's not an A. That sums it up, doesn't it? Anybody listening in here, they think, well, sure, that makes sense, but for us, it makes a great deal of sense. What does an A represent at this institution?
Acceptance.
Perfection. You're going to be a good pastor. Respect.
Money for grad students.
Money for grad students? Okay. Well, that's true. Money for grad students, but it usually represents competence. B students, are you B students competent?
Sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think. I hope so. Okay, how about A students? Are you competent? Ooh. You know what the scary part is? Is that everyone at this institution probably feels a bit overwhelmed and incompetent. A's are some kind of symbol for us that maybe we are competent. And B's represent that maybe our worst fears are being confirmed. I assure you, gentlemen, that competency does not lie within your grade. Your competency will be tested when you hit the parish. I encourage you, I don't want this to be misconstrued, I encourage you at all times to do the very best that you can, but not at the sacrifice of your child and your wife. Now, tell me about the wives. Here you are down there. Now, would you take a step forward, please? Now, this wife, what do we expect from seminary wives? Money? Okay, she has to work. Okay, you got that job. Now, tell me where this job fits in here. Is this job emotionally situated correctly here between the wife and the husband? Yeah. Don't we get so irritated when she has to work late? When our dinner's late? Yeah, that may be an extreme. But the job plays a very important role in our married life because it takes up so much of our time primarily. But what are the expectations? What is a sim wife like? If you had to write a job description for a sim wife, what would it be like? Busy? Okay, busy? What kind of personality do they have?
Serving,
of course. What else?
Humble.
Always willing to do what's asked.
Always willing.
Yeah.
No sacrifice is too great. Is that not correct? If you don't play the organ, you need to get organ lessons. Let me give you a hint here. If you type, don't tell anybody. Now, what else do we know about sim wives?
They're responsible for the children mainly.
They are mainly responsible for the children.
That's right. When daddy's home, daddy's be studying.
Right. So here we have a person who is responsible for bringing the money in, taking care of the kids, taking care of the home, and that gives you plenty of time to study. Now, when you say to your wife, you know, dear, I need to go study. How would you describe that look, that glaze that kind of comes over her eyes? How would you describe that?
It looks peculiar.
The anger, is that a word? Now, why would this woman, who's supposed to be so self-sacrificing and so supportive, what business is it of hers? I mean, here she is angry. Where does she get the right to be angry? Does this woman have a right to be angry? Yeah. Do we believe that she has a right to be angry? No. And why doesn't she have the right to be angry?
We're doing God's work.
We're doing God's work. Yes. You know, my wife is rather bright. She is. And I used that line one time. She said something to the effect, "And I'm not," because that's the bottom line here. Is it not God's work to be a wife and a mother? Is it not God's work to be a father and a husband as well as a student? I sincerely believe that God brought you here. I don't have a doubt in my mind about that, but not to the cost and the sacrifice of your family. I did so want to play that tape, "Stand By Your Man." A wife's, apostrophe S there, hopes and dreams for herself and her family are put on hold for 4 years. That creates some stress. It is at the expense of her husband. There is no greater sacrifice that can be made. The very act of moving to a strange town, going to a strange school, giving up careers, and putting all your money into someone else's bank account is a sign of support that should not be lost. Sim wives are told to be careful about what they say and how they say it and who they say it to. They are to be careful about how they dress, how they address others. They are to be careful about all things because you, the wife, will make or break the husband. I had that myth for a long time. I discovered that I could keep a job anyway. I'm just kidding. My wife is very loving. She's always been very supportive. I'm just joking. Don't anybody get that back to my wife.
She's right there.
Our roles tend to get confused. The wife is uncertain when she's being a father. The student is uncertain when he's being an instructor. The job people are working hard because you're a seminary wife, because you're a seminary student, and you are working for God, they go out of their way to give you special schedules. All of these things are occurring, but it is very, very confusing. It is especially confusing for those who are caught in the relationship. And the more stress there is in the relationship, the more role confusion there is, and the more role confusion there is, the greater is the stress. If your wife at any time becomes your mother, fire her, because you do not need a mother. You had a mother somewhere, I hope, God willing. But if you have married someone to be your mother, then you are in a situation that is going to be very uncomfortable, especially when you grow out of the need to have a mother. If your wife married you so that she could have a pastor, and she didn't, by the way, it is very confusing if you come home and play pastor to your wife. That is a role-confusing situation. And in my own research, one of the greatest sources of stress in a clergy marriage, once you leave here, was when the pastor would come home and say, "Here, I am the pastor," and would start preaching and do pastoral-type things rather than husband-type things. The scariest signs of this are when your children have to call you pastor in the congregation. When that occurs, ladies and gentlemen, something is incredibly upside down. This is your child. It is not your parishioner. You behave a certain way toward a parishioner. You do not behave that way toward your child. I touch my children. I touch lots of children, but I touch my children in special ways. I put my children in my lap and I say things to them that talk about love and caring, nurturing, and I say it in a very different way to other people's children. I don't want it to be misconstrued, but we have a very different relationship. And when that's your child, that needs a father far more than he does a pastor, because he can find a pastor. You're the only father that God has given to him. Let's see. How can we change this? That's the bottom line here. What are we going to do to fix this? Sorry? Graduate, yeah.
Communication.
But communication is already stilted. Communication is already stilted because of the stress that's in this relationship. To say, well, you need to talk more to each other is true, but it's very hard. So, well, how should this relationship be? If we were going to move these people around, how would we do it? How would you do it? Oh, get the arm off the seminary. Hey, Dad, why don't we get you to scoot over here?
Okay. So we don't...
Oh, is this right? No. It goes the other way? How many people feel the husband and wife should go the other way? Put the wife between the husband and the son? Ooh. Well, why don't we do this? Let's try this. Is that right? Does it feel right? Is this a trick question? No. Does it look right?
No.
What needs to change?
The son
and the wife have to switch places.
He still has to be connected.
I'm still a student.
I mean, otherwise...
But you all aren't touching. Ooh. Oh. Does that look better?
How about this?
Ooh, what do you think? A family photo. Does that look right? Somehow that feels better. One thing about the seminary, it never quite fits in. The seminary is a means to an end. It is not a replacement for your family. It is here for a specific purpose and reason. And we have to utilize the family. We have to... You have to be connected as a family. This is the only way that you will be able to survive the seminary. Your family will be able to survive the seminary emotionally intact and connected. You have to stay connected, and it is hard work, especially with the expectations that are being placed by the seminary upon this prospective pastor. That is the seminary's job. It is the student's job and the family's job to determine how much of that he is going to accept on himself, how many classes he's going to take, how much energy he puts into the classes as opposed to the needs of his family. And it goes something like this. The seminary needs so much nurturing, and the family needs so much nurturing. The student needs so much nurturing. Everyone has to be given their just due. If you work at Monsanto, you probably work, an average executive works 60 to 65 hours a week. Those are 6 10-hour days. That is not fun. And the same process that happens here happens to the executives at Monsanto. And surely we can rise above that, given the foundation that we have. If there is enough to go around, and when there's not enough to go around, you have to reprioritize on the side of your family. The seminary has been here for 151 years, and we will be here next quarter as well. And if you have to take one less course, or if you want to take more courses, it just depends on your family situation. But for some reason, if we get off track, if we don't make that A, we become less than competent. And not just less incompetent students, we become less incompetent human beings. Most of you, certainly you second career men, experienced what it was like to be competent in the world. And then you come here and you receive the message that maybe I'm not so competent because you're in a very foreign context. You have to learn literally foreign languages, but also the English vernacular is of its own subset. You have to learn the theological language. You are inadequate initially. It is our job to make you adequate, and your job to take what we have to give you and to make yourselves adequate, but never, ever at the cost of the family. It can be balanced. But you, the student, and the family of the student will have to determine what that balance is. The seminary doesn't want that job, we don't need that job, and we couldn't make a sound decision for your family even if we tried, because we have our own set of needs. Thank you all very, very much. Can we give them a little round of applause here, please? Thank you all very much. Are there any questions? We got about 5 minutes here.
Okay, I'll make a comment.
Please.
We talked about communication. Now, for my family, and I don't want to sound boastful here, but we have resolved this problem. And I would set an hour a day for my wife. I learned that from Pastor Overdeck when we got the introduction to Pastor Winnesley. So every morning my wife and I get up a little bit earlier, 6 o'clock, and we go out for coffee. It's one-on-one every single day.
That's nice.
And we've been doing this. I have her attention, she has mine. We sacrifice an hour less sleep, but we communicate the best time. If we don't do it, something is wrong and we feel the tension all day. So anywhere that you can take your wife off campus or your girlfriend off campus so you can have that communication is a great asset.
But never take them both at the same time. That's a joke. Sorry. Sorry. Your question.
How does the community, the seminary community, fit into all of this? It seems to me we spend a lot of time, our children spend a lot of time with other seminary children, our wives spend a lot of time with other seminary wives, and yet you can't take the seminary and look at it as an institution per se, because all the people here
right.
are of the seminary, and we are intricately interwoven and with each other.
But to find
in the experience.
To find support from your brethren here or to develop relationships here is a very positive aspect of this. It's when the seminary replaces your primary relationships that the problems begin. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is the question how do we make that interrelationship?
Yes.
When you talk about the seminary, when you say the seminary doesn't want to be part of that,
making decisions about your family life.
Okay. But in essence, they are making those decisions in some respect because they are making this intervention.
We set a very firm set of expectations, which are very stringent. How much of that you decide that you and your family choose to allow that to infiltrate and take upon your family time is a decision that you have to make.
Okay, but you're drawing a line. I hear you're drawing a line between academic expectations of the seminary and real life. This is where we're living right now. Aspect. You know, there's a difference to me. The academic part is for the husband and the student to take care of.
Yes.
He's got to figure out how to handle that. But at the same time, we have to figure out how we're going to deal with all that next seminary community and that sort of thing. And that, to me, is, I mean, we're together on that.
We are intertwined, but there has to be a boundary between the family and the seminary. It's when the roles get confused and there is no boundary between the roles that it becomes confusing. And that's where the anger comes from. When your wife says, well, I need an hour, and you say, well, I'm sorry, I got to study. And you've had all week, you know, it's like you've got hundreds of hours in already that week studying. But the anger comes up. That's when they glaze over. Questions?
Yes. One thing is that being married before you come to the seminary, your fiancé, you say, well, you know I'm going to be a pastor. These are the things being a pastor entail. For you, I don't know. You haven't been one yet, you know, yourself. So when you get into it, you're both discovering what it means to be a seminarian and
yes.
What it means to be a pastor. And you can't use that argument, well, you know, before you married me, I told you I was going to be a pastor. Because it's an unknown future.
Well, to discover if both people know the direction that you're going and to make discoveries as you journey together on that path is different than if you have started on one path and suddenly you take the road less traveled.
And one other comment, you said that there's a redefinition of your dreams as you go through the seminary. And you're looking at just survival. And I guess one of the great fears is that doesn't stop after the seminary. One person said, how do you solve this relationship? And they said, graduate.
Yes.
That's true. Graduation doesn't resolve something many times, it's survival feelings. And maybe you.
Well, for most, the parish experience is very different than the seminary experience, as we discussed. And there is much more nurturing going on in a parish, just by the very nature of the interaction and the role changes that you take on. I thank you for your questions. I am especially appreciative of your participation in this and your patience with me as we did this. I thank you for coming, and I will pray that God's peace be upon you and your families as you complete your journey.
We thank Dr. Barber for that this morning. Just two announcements. There is a truck load of food coming into the food bank at 11:30.